This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
To have the same intensity that you're going to have for game one of the playoffs, it's tough. But we just have to, it's more the principles of how we're playing the game, you know, the details of how we're playing the game, obviously. Okay, if the intensity maybe isn't quite matched to a playoff atmosphere, but let's do the things so we're feeling better about our game heading into the playoffs.
We do have a little bit of benefit that we've played all the teams in the playoffs before, and their styles are, even though they're quite contrasting, it's similar coaches, similar everything. So it's not going to be a surprise to us, but, you know, just Carolina play a completely different way than Boston does, they do. And everybody else is somewhere in between. So there is preparation that goes in, but, you know, fortunately for us, a lot of the guys in the room, including coaching staff, have coached against them before. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a benefit.
Stammer, Coop.
Yep.
Lightning tonight, Monday, against the Sabres. Couple of games left in the regular season for this Lightning team. And then we've got the fun that really begins. We still are waiting to see what's happening in the Eastern Conference.
We're going to be waiting, aren't we? This is the way this is going to unfold this year. Nice to be waiting, though, and not anxiously chewing our nails, unlike some other fan bases of teams.
I love the percentages that change for these teams that are on the bubble. Teams are like at 45% when they were in to start play on Saturday. Pittsburgh now is at 14%.
Well, you had said Pittsburgh had a very tough schedule. And the Penguins did have a tough schedule. They got a point out of, an overtime loss in Toronto. And then they had to play the Bruins at home. That's a tough game. So because they lost it, now they need help, right? They can't get in without help at this point. Am I wrong about that?
That is correct.
Yeah. If they win their remaining games, that's not going to be enough. They're going to need somebody else to lose.
They almost need every team to lose at some point. Because
yeah, I guess that's true because they're behind, right?
Yeah, they are.
I guess it would help if I opened the standings and looked at them rather than quizzing you. Look,
you're trying to keep me sharp.
You want a bit of a bold statement, though, and this statement is going to sit very, very well with the fan bases of three of the four teams and not at all with the fan base of one team. I think Montreal is going to take one of the games from Detroit. That is lining up as, I'm not saying take it to the bank, but I would not be at all surprised if Montreal bites Detroit in the rear end, because now the Red Wings are like, we've got the last place team in our division twice to finish. They need help too. They need a loss from Washington, or a point drop from Washington, loss of any kind. But you know, Red Wings fans are saying, we have these last two games. We're winning these last two games. Not so fast. Montreal has knocked off some teams recently, and they beat the Flyers twice. They took the Islanders to overtime. They're playing hard. And you know who the pressure is going to be on in those games. But that's only one of the teams that the Penguins need to have lose, right? They need to have the Capitals lose too.
Well, and you're forgetting, and you're not, but the biggest thing to point out is we're assuming that Pittsburgh can win the next two games.
Yeah, and they have Nashville at home.
Tough schedule.
I think, to the extent that you look at this and you say, well, actually, Nashville does not have wild card one locked up. I'm looking at it. Vegas could still overtake them. I don't know how much that matters. I mean, the Preds are in, and they know they're going to be a wild card team. Does it matter to them whether they face Dallas or presumably Vancouver? Probably not. But they're going to look to play well going into the playoffs. They're going to give the Penguins a good game.
And, you know, because the Penguins, like the teams who are fighting for that last wild card, have inconsistencies in their game.
Mm-hmm.
There are no gimmies with Pittsburgh. There are no gimmies with Washington.
Right.
I mean, they could have a clunker, which is why they are in this position where they're not only having to win out, Dave, but they need help.
Now, how about this for a wrinkle, though?
Yeah.
They play the Islanders in the final game, talking about Pittsburgh, and this will not be a Penguin show, I promise, but I find this very interesting. So people are kind of presuming the Islanders are going to make it. And maybe the Islanders are going to make it. But if Pittsburgh wins its last two games and the Islanders lose to the Devils in regulation, that means that, so let's say the Penguins beat Nashville in any way, overtime shootout or regulation, and the Islanders happen to lose to the Devils play tonight, right? That means that final game, the Penguins will only be 2 points back of the Islanders with the tiebreaker. It could be that the Islanders will have clinched, even though the Penguins mathematically could still catch them, depending on what happens with some other teams. That's very interesting. I wouldn't have thought that the Penguins could actually catch the Islanders still, but they can if they win that head-to-head matchup, depending on what happens in game 81 for both of those teams.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
There is a chance. It is crazy. And for the Lightning, they have no idea who they're playing. I still think the odds makers would say Boston is the most likely opponent, but the Panthers are only a point back with one game left. Bruins have two games left. Tiebreaker goes to the Panthers. Bruins are 3 points behind the Rangers with a game in hand, lose the tiebreaker, and they are 2 points behind Carolina, which could pass the Rangers. Mm-hmm. If Carolina passes the Rangers, the Bruins cannot catch Carolina. So basically, the only way the Bruins can get to the first overall is if Carolina and the Rangers lose their final game and the Bruins win their last two. But the Lightning could see the Bruins. They could see the Panthers. And are they still I guess what I just explained, I guess they're mathematically alive, if you want to put it that way, to see either one of the Metro teams. But it looks like it's going to be one of the Atlantic teams. But I think still mathematically, it could be one of four teams the Lightning are going to be playing in the first round. And here we are. We're in game 81 for the Lightning.
Now the Hurricanes
playoffs start this weekend.
Yeah. And I'm excited for it. I know you are as well. Yeah. Our audience is too. I think we're ready for it. I mean, here's the thing that's interesting is that the Lightning, regardless if they win or lose, their position is not going to change. They are locked into that first wild card.
Right.
So
their opponent is unclear, though.
Their opponent is unclear, but that's kind of out of their hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in terms of them moving up in the standings or somebody catching them based off of their play, it's irrelevant. Now, we can come back and, well, they like to see them really finish the season strong and win these next two and build that momentum heading into the game Saturday. I don't believe it. You know, that's my take. Some people do. And some people are going to look at the Buffalo game tonight and then the one on Wednesday against Toronto as if there is real meaning to them. And all I am telling you guys is that I do not see any of that.
You know what could be a very interesting storyline, though? If Austin Matthews does not score a goal tomorrow night against the Panthers, he will enter game 82 with 69 goals.
Yeah.
And Nikita Kucherov is at 98 assists with two games left. Still, there is still some question as to who will win the Art Ross, although Kuch does have the inside track at this point. McKinnon's down to one game left, and the Avs center is 3 points behind Kucherov. McDavid has missed the last couple of games due to injury, and Edmonton, he's 11 points back. That's a pretty big gap. How many games left does Edmonton have? Assuming he can play moving forward, the Oilers have 3 games left. So I would say it's going to be pretty tough for McDavid to catch Kucherov. If McDavid plays the final 3 games for Edmonton, there's no guarantee that he will or that they want him to. And that would be presuming basically that Kuch doesn't get any points in the last. It's 11 right now. If Kuch adds to that total, it would be even more. So Kuch, I would say, has the inside track to the Art Ross, but he still needs to get 2 more assists to 100.
Yep.
And nothing is guaranteed. So that game 82 could have not team implications, but star player implications for milestone seasons.
It's going to come down individually now to what maybe the Lightning can accomplish. And again, the biggest thing is health.
Yes.
And health, to me, almost takes precedent over where Kucherov finishes and where certain players finish when we come to goals and wins and things like that, because this has always been about the team. This has always been about the biggest picture for the Tampa Bay Lightning organization, and that is winning Stanley Cups. Along the way, if Nikita Kucherov can break records, if Braden Point can hit 50, if Steven Stamkos can hit 40 goals, hey, more power to you. And typically when you win, you're going to have those numbers come along for the ride. But honestly, Dave, and this is speaking from someone who has watched a lot of these moments, I don't really care what happens to the Lightning these next two games outside of being healthy. It's why we talked about Tyler Motte so much. And where is his availability? How is Chernak feeling? How is Hagel feeling? Does it make sense strategically to rest a player or two within reason on Wednesday, even if it's against Toronto and Auston Matthews has a chance for some history? None of that matters to me. What matters to me is the Lightning are healthy for the most part heading into the playoffs. Now, you can't control everybody's health. We understand that. You can't sit 15 players and bring up a bunch of guys from Syracuse and say, go for it, guys. But I think you can be smart about it, and I think you can rest certain guys. And I always hear, well, the Lightning, you know, it's hockey players don't like to sit, and that's not going to sit well with them. And I understand that thinking is true, but that doesn't mean it's still not the right decision. Now, if Cooch is chasing history, is chasing something, he's going to play.
I think if Cooch gets two assists tonight, he's still playing Wednesday because they're going to want to ensure that he gets the Art Ross. I think that's important to him. I think it's important to the team. To your point, though, like Hagel and Chernak are slated to play tonight. They both returned. The reason you mentioned them is they both got banged up in the game against Washington and left for a period of time, but both returned. Motte did not skate. So, look, the last report we heard, and we have not had a show since this press conference took place, mm-hmm. Coop said Motte is day-to-day. That's great news.
Yep.
He didn't say any longer, assuming that that is accurate, even though he has not yet put a skate back on. He's dealing with the effects of that block shot against Ottawa. I would say day-to-day would mean that, you know, it's not going to be a long-term situation. There's no reason for Tyler Motte to play. And if somebody gets banged up in a similar fashion tonight, yeah, I would expect that player not to play Wednesday. Andre Vasilevsky, however, and we've kicked this around quite a bit, I do expect to play Wednesday. Because if the Lightning open Saturday or they open Sunday, I think they want Vasi to get that game in for timing purposes.
Yeah, and who knows? Could that be a game where he plays half the game?
That would be
and
unusual, but anything is possible.
And then you put Tompkins in, yeah. And you just say, look, you want it. It's almost like treating it like an exhibition game in many ways. Hey, you're going to play the first 20.
Right.
Don't want you sitting. But also, you know, if we don't have to play the final 40 minutes. You know, we don't have to. We're going to be playing, and I'm throwing it out there. We're going to be playing Saturday, and it's not like you're going to be sitting for 2 weeks. So I think the team, where they are right now, is in a spot where, even more so because they've played so much hockey, they have some of their core players are veteran type players who have a lot of mileage. And that could be anybody, like a Chernak, it could be a Hedy, it could be anybody. Can you sit one or two of them who have been banged up and just say, look, I'd rather you be 100% or close to it with an extra day off and get ready for the playoffs than have you play against the Toronto Maple Leafs? And look, as long as you play, something bad could happen. And if it's going to if something bad's going to happen, I'd rather have it happen in a playoff game.
Right. Well, look, the Lightning don't have a lot of reserves though at this point, Greg.
They don't.
Because Motte is not available.
That
and
is
you
correct.
Have Fleury in a red no contact jersey, which is good news that he came back out on the ice, but he's still dealing with the effects of that collision with Steve Cazzari. So those are two guys that are not available. I mean, if you're thinking of sitting a defenseman, you only have one extra defenseman right now who is healthy, and that's Calvin DeHaan.
Right.
And to the best of my knowledge, other than Austin Watson, you have no extra healthy forwards. So we're not in the playoffs yet. The Lightning can't just call up a bunch of guys, not that they're going to do
correct.
That anyway from Syracuse, because Syracuse is going to get ready to start its own playoff run.
Do you have emergency recalls?
AHL.
Still,
you can. You can, but you need to have an injured player
to be able to do that. He'd have to fudge it a little.
True.
Right?
I think most of the lineup that we're going to see on Wednesday is going to be the game one lineup. But that's assuming they get through tonight's game unscathed. So
that's
we'll wait and see. I do have an update on Johansson and Fleury from John Cooper, which he said he expects that both will be ready for game one of the playoffs. We haven't seen Jonas Johansson on the ice in, 2 weeks or so?
Yeah, I'm thinking off the top of my head. Yeah. Because how many starts has Tompkins had?
Two.
Since Johansson went
down. At Montreal and home Ottawa.
One a week, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it's... I'm glad they're able to get Tompkins some NHL action, you know, while Johansson has been out. And I thought he acquitted himself pretty well.
Very well.
And so that's something to take into consideration. If our audience wants to react to where things are in the standings right now at Bolts Radio on X, you can do it. It is interesting that other leagues, and it's specifically football and baseball, Dave, you can bring up a bunch of minor league guys or go to a practice squad to maybe help.
But their salary cap situation is different. I mean, baseball doesn't really even have a salary cap. They have a luxury tax, but...
There is. And so I think we made this point when COVID hit and we had the Black Aces. But remember, some teams were having to really do a lot of gymnastics to be cap compliant. It just didn't make a lot of sense. I still think a physical sport like hockey, 82 games and the grind of it, I do think it would be interesting, and I'm sure the union wouldn't mind it because it would be more jobs and better pay than at the AHL level if you implemented something like a Black Aces for the whole year. And it can be interchangeable, and maybe it's a max of 7 players, maybe 1 goaltender. And you have to understand who can really benefit from being on that list. So you're not going to want to put a first-year pro all year on the practice squad. You know, but maybe you can bury a few players who are 25, 26, veterans who, you know, probably wouldn't mind collecting somewhat of an NHL paycheck, practicing with the team. Maybe they don't travel. But it's something to that extent where if you do get a few injuries, particularly late in the season, or if you're a team who's trying to protect that load management, you're not in the situation where it's like, well, everybody has to play because they just have no options.
Yeah.
I think the gruelingness of the hockey season would suggest, I think that would be beneficial for the players, because I'd want to see a healthy Kucherov and Stamkos and Hedman heading into the playoffs as much as possible. And if I have an option to sit them, even if they don't want to, but if I have the option to, I think more people would be inclined to look at them and say, I think that actually benefits our team in the long run in the playoffs to get a couple of more days healthy. So more of an outside the box thinking, but I think it's worthy for consideration. And probably because I brought it up.
Yes.
You've been banging that drum
for a while now.
Yeah. It probably came out more when COVID hit.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the fact that teams were penalized for something they didn't control with the cap and the rosters. It just didn't make a lot of sense, because it will affect player safety if you're playing with a short-handed number of players in a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more stress on other people, and that's just, I think, unnecessary. So, you know, that's all I'm saying on that. So if people want to react, they can at Bolts Radio. What did you make of, because we'll get some questions throughout from our audience, the game over the weekend against the Caps. I know there were a lot of people who looked at that game and felt like, you know, hey, the Lightning are going to take care of business. And, you know, Washington's a team who's been up and down. And certainly that game had some fireworks. We can get into the Mikey Acemont hit. I had a lot of people the next day come up to me when I was at my daughter's cheer competition who wanted to discuss that a little bit and get my take on whether I thought it was dirty or clean, and, you know, where do I sit on it? And I feel like that took on a life of its own. But, you know, that was a game where Washington, you know, needed it more than Tampa Bay. And did it play out like that? Yeah, maybe. You know, certainly the first couple of goals.
Yeah.
Milano, you know, coming through in a big way for them. But, you know, credit to Washington and being able to find a way to earn 2 points, because they needed it a lot more than certainly Tampa Bay did.
Well, they did need it a lot more than Tampa Bay. But... All right, so against Pittsburgh, the Lightning really stormed back in the third period. But the first two periods of that game, the game the Penguins won in Pittsburgh. That game looked like a game between a team desperate for points and a team that had clinched a playoff spot. And you could see the disparity there, meaning Pittsburgh was basically dominating play. Washington did not dominate play on Saturday. So even though you were right, the Capitals needed the points way more than the Lightning, it's not like that was reflected in how the game unfolded. I think the disappointing part for the Lightning, this was certainly expressed by John Cooper after the game, they were very sloppy at points and kind of handed some freebies to the Capitals. Now, the Capitals had to execute once they got those freebies to turn them into goals, and they did. Not the power play goal, but the other three all started when the Lightning had possession of the puck in the defensive zone and basically fumbled it away. And I know I said at the time that Milano scored his first goal. Those are the sorts of plays that are going to be a real problem in a playoff series. I mean, they're a problem at any point, but the significance of those mistakes is magnified in a playoff series. So when the Lightning talk about the details of their game, they want to get the details of their game ironed out heading into the playoffs. Making unforced turnovers in your own zone is not honing the details of your game. And the Capitals, who have been kind of struggling to score our goals all year, with maybe a little bit of an exception in a segment prior to their recent tailspin where they had one win in eight and they had scored two goals or less in all eight of those games. Prior to that, they'd started scoring a little bit more, but they are an offensively challenged team this year. Even the most offensively challenged teams are going to score if you give them freebies. So that was probably the biggest disappointment from that game, and that's why John Cooper was kind of irked, honestly, after the game. So we'll see if they minimize those mistakes tonight and on Wednesday. Outside of that, I mean, it was a fairly evenly played game, honestly. I thought the Lightning showed resilience battling back twice from one goal deficits in the first period. Charlie Lindgren was very good. I mean, the Lightning, you can't really argue with what the Lightning did offensively. I mean, they generated enough chances to score more than two goals. And look, the eventual winner came when the Lightning got into penalty trouble, which really didn't happen through the game, but they took overlapping penalties in the third period, putting the Caps on a long 5-on-3, and the Caps scored the eventual game-winning goal a few seconds after the 5-on-3 ended. So it was a 5-on-4. You are putting yourself up against it if you are going to be down two men. And it was off the rush. So, I mean, the Lightning had gotten one guy out of the box and hadn't really even gotten regrouped for the remaining part of the penalty kill, and the Caps came down, made a play, and scored. But the bigger issue was, why did they give up four? They gave up four because they were not buttoned up defensively. So that's how I saw the game. Vasilevskiy was very good, though. I mean, again, if we're looking for trends, the details of their game trended down, but Vasilevskiy's continued high-level goaltending was something else that we saw. I mean, he really hasn't had kind of even a hiccup sort of game in quite some time. I mean, you want to say that Letang goal in Pittsburgh that kind of dribbled through him, which might have been tipped by a Lightning player. I never really got confirmation on that. That might be the only goal where you say, like, that's kind of on him. He had a puck play on the Milano goal. But, I mean, that wasn't a play in which, you know, he had a chance to make a save and didn't. He had a turnover there. So, okay, fair enough. You want to put that one on him a little bit. Like, maybe he needs to sweep it somewhere else. But his goaltending has been terrific. So those are my takeaways from the actual game itself. The Acemont hit. It's hard to argue when the officials rule it a major initially and then when they look at it on video and they say there was no penalty on the play. Because they are getting confirmation, the opposite of confirmation, they are getting evidence that refutes their original call. So it's kind of hard to argue that it should have been a penalty when they looked at it on review and changed it from a major to nothing. So letter to the law, that is not a penalty. And what I heard a lot of, and I even said this on the air, was it was a legal check with a bad outcome, and that is true. I will say this, and I would say this if the rules were reversed. I would definitely say it if the rules were reversed and it was a Lightning player that got hurt. I think that there was an element of, like, he didn't need to hit him that hard. Based on where he was on the ice and the fact that he was following through and a little off balance. Now, I've never been in that situation. You're supposed to finish your checks. AC Mount is a guy who does finish his checks. But had he not hit him quite so hard, I'm not sure that the outcome would have been quite so bad. But that's a hard argument to make at the same time, Greg, isn't it? Like, do you want your players to let up on finishing a check? I don't know. But the ruling was it was a clean hit because, I mean, what did he do? He didn't board him. They were far enough away from the boards. He hit him on the side. He didn't hit him in the back. At the time, I said, would they call cross-checking? I mean, he does extend his arm a little bit, but I was talking to Brian Engblom after the game. He's like, that's how you finish a check. Your arms do get extended. He didn't fling him. I mean, it's not like he rocketed him into the boards. He finished his check, and the guy was off balance and took a very, very hard hit against the boards and, by all accounts, was knocked unconscious. So, yes, that part of it, I would say, it was an unfortunate outcome. But I guess if I were trying to look at it as shoe in the other foot, I would say, did he have to hit him as hard as he did? I don't know what you think about it.
I think he was just in a weird spot. You know, if that was closer to the boards, he probably doesn't have that same impact because I think the distance from where he was hit to the boards created that violent hit. And he just kind of catapulted into it based off of, I think, AC Mont extending those arms. I think it was a really tough hit. I don't think it was a bad hit. I think it was a hit on a player who was potentially vulnerable with regards to where he was with the boards. And I think that, to me, is the distance. Look, we're also in an era today, if you look at me differently, you have to answer and fight. And it's not a surprise that, you know, AC Mont had a target on his back. Did that change the game for Washington? I don't know. Maybe if you ask them, it raised their chin up a little bit more.
I'm not sure. I mean, that's my point. I don't think they were dominating the ice.
I don't know. You'd have to ask Washington. From where I sit, I don't know if that really tilted the ice. What was interesting is that, did you catch in the penalty box? Dowd looked at Ace Munson and said, nice job, Mikey. thanks for dropping the gloves.
Yeah. Well, look, he didn't have to fight, but he understood.
It's a tough spot
he
not
understood
to, though, right?
That Washington needed to kind of step up for their teammate, and they did. And so AC Mont agreed. I didn't know that Dowd said that. But the other part, too, and I actually want to look this up as we're speaking right now, because a bunch of these guys went to St. Cloud State, and I want to see if they were actually teammates at the same time. Because Jensen went to St. Cloud State, as did AC Mont. As did Dowd. I think Dowd went there too. So let's see. Jensen was there from 2010 to 2013. And when was AC Mont there? I don't see AC Mont when Jensen was there. So it's all about, like, when were they there, right? But, I mean, yeah, so AC Mont arrived after Jensen left. And I'm going to check Dowd. Dowd was there with Jensen, but not with AC Mont. So, look, they all know each other. It would be like, Greg, you started picking a fight on air with another Duquesne guy, right? You believe that guy from Duquesne said this? You're like, wait a minute, I'm from Duquesne, but I got to stand up for my station, right? So that's interesting. And, of course, Nick Perbix also went to St. Cloud State. Charlie Lindgren went to St. Cloud State. So you had five guys at St. Cloud State all in the game on Saturday. But Jensen and AC Mont were never teammates there. They weren't there at the same time. But I can understand why Dowd would stand up for Jensen, because they were teammates at St. Cloud State.
So that, you know, that took on a life of its own. And anytime you see somebody leave on a stretcher, it's just a really tough moment.
Medically, he is okay. And that is the most important takeaway. From a hockey standpoint, maybe I shouldn't say medically, but he is not returning tonight for Washington, or presumably for their final game tomorrow. It's a back-to-back for the Capitals, and they are going to miss him. He's a very important player on their team.
Yeah. For sure. And, you know, the Caps, as you mentioned, it was staggering looking at their numbers individually about how anemic their offense is, but it is really eye-opening. So for them, four goals was an eruption. I know they at times have done it with defense and goaltending. Lindgren actually did impress me. Does that mean I think if they get in, he'll be phenomenal? I don't know that answer, but he was a lot better than I thought, at least in that game. I actually thought, you mentioned too, Vasi was good. Just had a couple of weird bounces in that game that went against him playing the puck. That, you know, resulted in a goal. But, you know, as I said to you before, I wasn't going to dwell too much on the game, but it played out for Washington, I think, the way they wanted it to. You come away with a couple of points, and, you know, you move on from there. And I think the Lightning are probably going to do the same thing against a team tonight in Buffalo who, let's face it, their expectations this year have not aligned with where they are going to finish.
Yeah, they're trying to find a silver lining. Like, well, our points percentage is, like, where are they at? This is their final game, by the way. They have one game left. So they've played 81 games, and they have 82 points. But that is not good enough. I mean, we've talked about it. 96. Maybe you can get in with low 90s. Wild card 2 this year is probably going to be getting in high 80s, low 90s. Buffalo at 82 points and with a high potential of 84 if they win tonight. That's just not good enough. And this was the year they were supposed to take another step forward. And they didn't. Now, maybe they found their goalie. I mean, I know that Devon Levi is the guy that people are saying he's the centerpiece of this guy or this trade that they made with Florida, and he's going to be their stud goalie of the future. I mean, Lukanen has had a terrific second half of the year and grabbed the starter's position. Maybe they build around him. They are better defensively this year than they were last year, but they took a big step back offensively.
Yeah.
So
I think that's all fair. And it's not too long ago where we would sit there with Mike Harrington in November and say, I think this team's for real. And it just, you know, never really.
The Buffalo Sabres would like to take the last six seasons and just take the first month of each of those seasons and put that together for a 6 month season. They would be a playoff team if that were the case. That's not how it works, though.
That is true. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Buffalo's played some good hockey of late.
Yeah, and they played the Lightning pretty well this year. Yeah. And Rasmus Dahlin has 20 goals, new career high for him in goals.
How's Tage doing? Is he back to
Tage is up
scoring?
To 29 goals, but yeah, I mean, he had 47 last year.
I know, but didn't he got out? Was he either hurt or just got off to a slow start? No, yeah, and he got off to a slow start.
Yeah. Their power play is down about 7-8 percentage points from last year. So they just have not filled the net like they did last year, but they've been better defensively than they were last year. But all of that, like you bake that into the cake, and what you come out with is a team that's a point per game.
Right.
And that's not good enough in today's NHL.
It is not. And they're a team where this has probably gone on way too long, being mediocre. You know, this isn't an expansion team. So I think that's the disappointing part. I think when you're a team that starts to miss the playoffs beyond 3-4 years, you've got to do some soul searching within that organization. And I think teams like the Columbuses, the Buffaloes, the Ottawas, it's not normal in today's NHL to be where they are. And throw Detroit in there, who is maybe starting to turn the corner, fighting for that playoff spot. But, you know, the Pittsburghs, the Washingtons, even the Lightning to an extent, and Boston, let's throw them in there. You know, the cap, when you think about it, honestly, it's not meant for those teams to be at the top for 10 years. Because the point of parity in the salary cap is that the reason those teams have been at the top is they have really good players. And eventually those really good players get paid. You're probably making trades at the deadline to try to win now, understanding you only have so many years. So eventually it's going to get to the point where you've got to pay up, so to speak, for everything you sacrificed to get to where you were. And it's remarkable that the Lightning have had this long run. It's pretty remarkable that Washington and Pittsburgh probably are hanging on by a thread. Boston, the same thing. But really, the NHL is meant for a constant cycle of new teams coming in every so often and challenging for a playoff spot. And it really hasn't happened for some of those teams I mentioned. And you could look at it one of two ways, Dave. You could say, well, the teams I mentioned being at the top have just been really good. And they haven't had many cracks in the armor. Or you could look there and say, boy, those teams that can't break through, they've had some serious mishaps in drafting and developing, and maybe even more importantly, just coaching and management.
Yeah, you make a very good point, because if you look at, so the 8 playoff teams are set in the West. We have 6 set in the East. The 6 that are set in the East are all regular attendees of the playoffs, right? I mean, Florida has definitely elevated in the last couple of years. And I know last year they just got in the playoffs by the skin of their teeth, but let's not forget the year before they won the President's Trophy. So they've been a playoff team for a number of years. Toronto's been a playoff team since the second year of Matthews, Marner, etc. Bruins have basically been a playoff team in perpetuity for a decade. They had a couple of years where they missed, but they were regulars before and after. Rangers have been there probably for the last 4 years. Carolina has been there since Brind'Amour took over as head coach. And then you have the Lightning. So the two remaining teams, if the Islanders get in, are they really a team that you would say is ascending? They're an old team. That was what we were talking about with Brendan Burke when the Islanders came in. He's like, the Islanders are not like a team filled with these young stud prospects. They're kind of a veteran team. So if they get in, they're getting in because their veterans are leading the way. And then of the other teams, whether it's Washington or Pittsburgh, certainly those are not like young teams. We've talked about Detroit. They have a couple of young stars, but they're a more veteran team. And who knows what's going to happen with the Flyers. Like, is this a step forward for the Flyers, or is this a one-off? So I'm kind of agreeing with you in the East. And then in the West, I mean, Colorado's been there. Dallas has been there. Winnipeg has improved this year, but Winnipeg has been a playoff team. Edmonton has been a playoff team. The Kings elevated a couple of years ago, but they've been a playoff team. Nashville has been a playoff team, not a team that has gone deep in the playoffs or finished near the top of the standings to get a good seed in the playoffs, but they have been a playoff team in Vegas. And then you have Edmonton, which they've been I mentioned Edmonton. You have Vancouver. They're the upstart team this year. But I'm basically, of the teams that I've mentioned, the 16 teams that are getting into the playoffs this year, I would say conservatively 12 have been basically locked into the playoffs for an extended period of time. And then the other 3 to 4, you might have 1 or 2 that you're like, boy, they took a big step forward this year, but there's no guarantee they're going to maintain it. And the other 2 are kind of like, they're in, they're out, they're in, they're out. So you're right. It's not only that the teams whose windows are supposedly closing, those windows are not closing, but also the teams that have been bad and gotten really high draft picks have not been able to join the party, so to speak.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of it. You could probably throw the Flyers in there too. I feel like they've had some setbacks, probably starting when Ron Hextall was there.
Right. Yeah, and if they get in, they'll be an upstart team, but do you believe that they are like, Flyers are going to be a team to be reckoned with for the next 7-8 years. Maybe they will be, but not based on their current lineup. I think they've overachieved this year.
I wonder,
that's the perception.
I wonder, too, if a team like Detroit might be better poised in terms of actually having the stars to lean on. Maybe you don't feel like Lucas Raymond is a star.
He's a really good young player, as is Mo Sider. But once you get past those two guys, Greg, the rest of their group, they have good players, but they're not like 21, 22 years old.
It's fair. It's fair. You know, because they've had to mix and match with the David Perrons and some other players. I mean, look, they get, you know, Patty Kane, which was a savvy move, but that's not a lot. He's 35.
I just saw a story today. Kane and Red Wings may part ways at the end of the season. I mean, we'll see.
And nobody
like
should be surprised.
Edvinson, the big defenseman, too. Yeah. So he's a prospect as well.
I think the teams on the outside looking in, when you start to talk about maybe star power, it's the Devils that stick out as somebody who you feel like made a financial commitment to bring in some high-end guys to complement, you know, a Jack Hughes. I mean, look, you don't go out and get Andre Pilat if you don't think you're close.
And they do have some good young players. And I'll count Bratt and Heeshear as still young. I mean, they are not on the tail end of their career, far from it. And then you got the Hughes brothers. They are definitely tremendous young prospects, terrific players. The Simon Nemitz, you know, was a very, very high draft pick. We're going to see how he evolves as a player. But this was a disappointing year for them. They took a huge step back.
Yeah, and I think Ottawa probably in the same boat.
Except
for sure.
Ottawa didn't get as far as New Jersey last year.
No, but in terms of like talent on that roster, I've always come away impressed with what they have. You know, Tkachuk leading the way, but I feel like they have some guys there who could be difference makers. And it just hasn't worked out. And I want to bring this back to the Lightning, and then I want to get some questions. You do have to hit on the draft picks. It's not necessarily in the later rounds. That helps. That allows you to maintain, you know, just kind of a 1 or 2 year window. But yeah, was Steven Stamkos a no-brainer when they drafted him? Yeah, but you still got to hit on him, right? Same with, you know, a Victor Hedman. You know, same with whether it was a Vasi and where he was drafted. And again, you can get into the points and the Kucherovs, and those are maybe a little bit more input from your scouting department, maybe a lot more. And that does separate Tampa Bay from the good teams to the great teams. But when you get the high-end players, you do have to hit on them. And it's what made, I think, Washington successful, Pittsburgh successful, Tampa Bay for sure successful. And that's a valuable lesson.
You have said, Greg, what you want. So we have kind of come at this from opposite ends of the spectrum. I think you need both. But I think for me, to be successful in the playoffs, you need to be playing really well as a team. And you need to be buttoned up defensively as a team, and everybody has to be pulling on the rope. And that is true. But also, to have success in the playoffs, you need game breakers. Like, structure and playing as a team will keep you in games, right?
Yeah.
But you need guys who can make plays. And not all of the guys on the Lightning who would fall into that playmaking category were necessarily high-end draft picks, but the Lightning got them. So when you look at the Lightning, and I'm going to make this list leaving out some guys that somebody might say, well, what about this player? I'm like, fair enough. But just for the sake of this discussion, I'm going to mention these five guys: Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Braden Point, Andrei Vasilevsky. In their own way, they are five of the best players in the NHL. And the Lightning have all of them on their team.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, there's some other teams that say, well, we have five players too. Fine, fair enough. But there are some teams that are really good teams that maybe have two of those players. Or maybe only one of those players. And that's where maybe the deficiency of those game breakers or playmakers or difference makers or just a cut above the prototypical NHL player, and the prototypical NHL player is an exceptional athlete, but but these are the very, very best of the best. If you're missing some of these guys, if you don't have any of them, you're going to have a hard time winning, which is where you were saying you need to hit on your high draft picks, because that's where you find these guys generally. Some teams can find them later, right, where they evolve into players that nobody was expecting, but usually they are at the top of the draft. And if you have a deficiency in that category on your team, it's going to be difficult for you to have a lot of success, either in the regular season and certainly in the playoffs.
Couldn't agree more, partner. Said it well at Bolts Radio. And look, these are topics you have when you have two games left in the regular season and we're waiting for the playoffs
right
to begin. But I think it's nice to bring it back, because I don't think many people were giving the Lightning this type of props midway through the season, Dave. There were some people, and even at the beginning of the year, there were some people that the Lightning maybe had taken a step back, mm-hmm. and that they weren't the juggernaut that they had been. You can debate whether you think they are a juggernaut, whatever adjective you want to use. I think the Lightning have done enough over the last 6 weeks to restore faith in the people who follow them closely, that this is a team that A, nobody wants to play, and B, can beat anybody in the playoffs.
I think that's true.
And I'm not sure many people thought that 6 weeks ago. And I know not many people thought that before the season began. So just kind of keep that all in mind. This Xer, can I call it Xer, I guess? No, tweet. Coochie Kurov. This is a new one. I like that.
Yeah. First time tweeter.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Agree with Greg that health is the number one priority, but I would love to see my guy Cooch hit that 100 assist mark. Such a historic mark to hit, considering how few have done it. An Art Rose or Hart would be a nice appetizer to go along with another Stanley Cup.
Well, I think everybody on the Lightning would like to see him get to 100 assists. That is an amazing accomplishment if you can get there.
What do you I'm putting you on the spot, and I don't like to do that, but you're savvy enough to come with a good response. What do you think are some of the more accomplished individual records you've seen players achieve as a member of the Lightning? Like, where would 100 assists rank for Cooch?
Well, there have only been three players ever in the history of the league to do it.
Right. So, like, would that be the greatest thing you've ever... When I say greatest...
I don't know.
You see Stammer getting 60.
Yeah.
Even Stammer putting up 100 points late in his career, I think, is kind of a cool achievement. Not team-wise, because I think that's easy to sit there and say. And it could even be a game. It could even be a game where you saw somebody just do something pretty remarkable. But that's probably going to have Kucherov's hands all over, right?
Hockey is such a team sport. It's hard to
It's
hard to single out individual accomplishments. Like, maybe other than the position of goaltending. Like, people talk about Dominik Hasek and how he kind of single-handedly, he couldn't score for the teams he played for, but he did everything he could to keep the puck out, and he did it in such a unique way. But I will kind of go back to a discussion that we had last year, I think. And I actually saw this list. I forget who the writer was in Pittsburgh, but he threw out his top 10 all-time NHL players. And it was just meant to spark a discussion. He wasn't saying other people's lists are wrong. He's like, I'm curious. That'd been Rob Rossi. And look, on most people's top 10 lists of all time, there are going to be multiple Pittsburgh Penguins on there. I mean, there's no way they can't be. You've got Lemieux, you've got Crosby. Where are you going to rank them? You want to put Jágr on there if you feel he's in the top 10. That's three. Although Jágr played for like half the league, right?
Second leading scorer all time, right?
But NHL to me, and this isn't about like individual accomplishments, but to me, the three greatest players in NHL history. And I didn't see Gordie Howe play, so Phil might have a different list, are Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Bobby Orr. And they were great for different reasons. Gretzky was unparalleled in how he thought the game. We talked about that as it relates to Cooch.
Sure.
Lemieux, I think, was and I have a fourth guy, but I don't think he was at the level of Lemieux. I think Lemieux was unique in that he combined power and skill at, like, off-the-charts level. So he was very, very hard to defend and or revolutionize the position of defense. So those aren't individual, like, accomplishments, but the way they were able to play and change the game, I think, separates them. The fourth guy I'm going to mention, he probably wouldn't be on most people's top 10 lists, but boy, did I love watching him play, and that was Peter Forsberg. So Forsberg, in a way, was, he was a little bit like Lemieux light. I think he was more, he engaged contact more than Lemieux, and while he was immensely skilled, I don't think he was as skilled as Lemieux. I mean, it's almost like just a notch below. But he was a joy to watch. I mean, I did a lot of watch. When he was in the NHL, I was still in the minors, so usually I was watching him. I only saw him play live for a couple of years before. And look, he played a physical game, so kind of like Lemieux, you know, injuries short-circuited his time in the NHL. But look, there's no right or wrong answer to this, right? I mean, you want to put Crosby and Ovechkin on there for what they have done in their careers, which are still ongoing? I don't have an argument with that. But to me, if you were the very best at kind of a certain type of attribute and or you revolutionize the game, that puts you in a separate category. But that's why these debates can be fun. And, you know, I try not to get too worked up about it. Like, you're completely sure. Wrong. Your three people that you chose should be 8th, 9th, and 10th. Although, if you're putting Wayne Gretzky 10th, then you've ingested something that is altering your brain a little bit.
I saw somebody put together a list. It might have just been on X. And, you know, people make comments. They make me laugh. The list begins with, in whatever order, but it's these three players: Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr.
That's what I said. Yeah. I mean, that's
basically where you are.
Yeah.
That's basically how it should go. And then from there, you know, look, I've heard Wayne Gretzky say that Mario Lemieux is the greatest player he's ever seen. And that if with Lemieux, and I don't know how much you keep the injuries from boasting that claim he's the best ever, certainly staying healthy, I think, is part of it. I think you do, but some of it, I mean, it just, you know, you're born with a bad back and you have cancer. I mean, what are you going to do? That's tough. Obviously.
Yeah, the cancer part was clearly was unrelated to how he played. But, you know, he wasn't hammering guys, but he was so big and strong that people, like, he engaged more contact than Gretzky did. Gretzky was slippery, right? Mario wasn't. And if you have a bad back, or maybe he had an okay back that became a bad back, it wasn't getting any better based on how he played, right?
You know, the thing about Lemieux and why I put him where he is, which is, for me, number one, and that's not a surprise. I know people are going to say, well, Greg, you're from Pittsburgh. Okay. Well, the guy won a scoring title after going through chemotherapy the same year. He also took how many years off and came back and was the best player in the game?
Yep.
I mean, that's just, Dave, we know when people take a couple of weeks off, it takes them a while to get back into the swing of things. Lemieux came back and just said, okay, well, I'm the best there is, and I mean, I that first game back when he took 3.5 years off and he took on Toronto and he had, I think, 3 points. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just typical Lemieux, you know? And are the Lightning going to have any players like that knocking on the door, you know, if you could put in a top 10 list? They certainly, if guys keep doing what they're doing, there could be a conversation. And I'm speaking specifically at the man in net. And it'll be interesting to see where Kucherov falls with points all time.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty incredible how many 100-point seasons he has. And you do get the sense, Dave, he doesn't play a taxing game. And when I say that, like, he's not a power forward.
Right.
Who's going to take a beating in net. I mean, how many times have we come away and say, well, I really didn't notice Kucherov, but he had 2 assists.
You know, that makes the Jágr accomplishment even more mind-boggling. Not just his records at the NHL level, but just that he's still playing, right? Because he certainly was never a perimeter player. He's a big, strong guy.
Yep.
Usually big now, and Ovechkin the same way. Like, how is it that Ovechkin has been so durable? I understand he's strong, but he's played a physical sort of game.
Now you could make a case though, because, and those guys, when I say big, I mean, you can make an argument. Ovechkin and Yager were probably 240.
Yeah.
So were they able to withstand the beating?
Maybe that's how they've been able to do it.
The thing too is Ovechkin scored a lot of his points from the power play where he's just one timing.
Right, but now, I'm talking about his durability.
Durability, no doubt. I think probably his weight in a good way. I mean, both those players are thick. Luck.
That's part of it for sure.
Genetics.
And they ascribe to the Greg Linnelli philosophy of do not block a shot if at all possible.
Is Eric Chernak going to block another shot? Probably. I know people laugh a little bit when I brought that up, like last year.
Why didn't you text me? Why is this even a stat when they had?
Why is this even? I mean, honestly,
block shots.
He's got 1,000 block shots, and to me, I'm thinking, oh God, agents love that, and they love it because it's the guys who don't score a lot. You can go to them and say, hey. My guy, look what he does. He just sucks pucks in. I do think, listen, I'm going to keep harping it because Chernak's a big part of what they do. I do think it's okay to adjust your game as you get older. Players do it all the time, Dave. You go from being an elite scorer to a, you know, maybe more of like a checking line center.
Yeah.
You go from being a top four defenseman to, you know, you're still a good defenseman. You're not playing as many minutes. You become more of a PK specialist or a face-off specialist. I use Jeff Carter as an example. You know, Jeff Carter slowed down a lot, but he's still a guy that Mike Sullivan will throw out there on the fourth line or third line to play 10 minutes and to win some face-offs. Is there value in that still? Yeah. And I think for a player like Chernak, and anybody who blocks shots, who's a big part of your team, I do think you have to be strategic a little bit. Because, again, I'll end it with this. The goal is to win a championship. You can block as many shots as you want in the playoffs. And look, there's a time and place for it in the regular season. But I think the blocking of the shots in the regular season in general, I don't think it's great for the game. That's me personally. I'm an open guy. I like to see shots through. I like to see offense. I do. I understand with the equipment, it makes it easier to block shots. But I also know, if that's part of your game for an 82-game season, that is a hard way to make a living. And especially if you are a top four, top two defenseman, asking him to block shots every game, and they're not asking him to. That's what Chernak does. I do think if you want to stay longer in the league and add value in the playoffs, I just think you have to pick and choose when you want to do it. Just like anything else. Pick and choose. So we'll see. We'll see if it happens tonight.
Yep.
Lightning and Sabres. Partner, I will see you down at the rink. Pre-game's at 6:30. Puck drops at 7. And we will be back in this setting tomorrow.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it, but I believe we're going live tomorrow, are we not?
Okay.
Yeah, well,
that's
and
fine.
Then live Wednesday for sure with Toronto.
I'll be ready
for the final.
I'll be ready for all
game.
Y'all.
Yep.
It'll be good. Steve Ersnick, thank you for listening. And we appreciate all you guys out there. Get those questions in at Bolts Radio. You've been listening to Power Lunch on Lightning Radio.